Welcome to the Caldivian, you cocksucking motherfucking dog shit ass cunt bitch.
Welcome to the Ian Ellis podcast. Today I'm joined by
Brad
Stupak and Mr. Chris.
This is a new episode.
Chris Schweitzer,
who taught me how to remember names today. Yeah. He said you got to make an acronym with the way they look. He couldn't remember my name, so I say Ian Pian. I'm always taking a piss.
We're taking the piss out of people. Has the matted beard.
Yeah. Yeah. If you heard last week's, this is a new one with the same people. We're just both here.
These are the regulars.
We just found our way back to Josephine's again, and here we are.
Well, I now have unlimited data, so normally, like, if I have a long conversation, I might just scrap it or I'll cut it super short, but now it's like, I'm just putting up fucking everything. So, bonus content, but try to be funny. Don't waste the listener's
time. You put it right
off
your phone?
Yeah.
You don't edit it or anything?
Well, sometimes I'll edit it.
I know you edit.
I
know you put intros
in. Like, sound quality at all.
Yeah.
Oh, it comes out pretty good. We're going to have fucking old music playing in the background.
Yeah, we got people tap dancing upstairs. You hear that?
Holy shit.
What is that?
Like Butters
song?
Or something. I've got something in my front pocket for you.
I can't believe that's still a thing, you know? I can't believe that is still a thing. Louis C.K. was talking about that.
Yeah,
about tap dancing.
Remember that.
Fucking Louis, let's start there. You guys.
You want to start with Louis?
You guys hate him?
Dude, the guy's a legend.
I made fun of him the first week. And my angle was like five people? Four books in the Bible. Five people? But his proclivity is called being an exhibitionist. It's like what he's into. And after the rage cycle went through, you realize, like, well, he asked the women first. It wasn't like... like, they made it up like he was abusing his power or holding the door shut, like, I'm gonna jack off on you. Ah! Mm-hmm. And I don't know that it was actually like that. I think he might have asked, and they might have said yes, thinking is a goof, and then been uncomfortable with reality.
He could help their careers, you know? I mean, it's worth a shot. I'd probably watch him jack off if I thought I could get on TV.
Well, does he really have the power? Is he a booker? I mean, other than kind of recommending
somebody?
He probably could. Now, this
launched
is
Tignataro over the top?
My opinion on this comes with a complete disclaimer. I'm not in that scene. I don't know Louis. I don't know anyone that knows Louis personally.
Uh-huh.
I don't know any of that.
Okay, granted.
But...
I do.
But
they didn't tell
but
me
from
shit.
My, from what I've heard, a lot of it was like him pulling his dick out with his phone and getting people's reactions, and that's what other comics have said. And everybody who said it, there's like, there's plenty. I mean, like Doug Stanhope was one. There's plenty, like that have had that happen to them, and it's just kind of like that's Louis, you know. But it's like, when is it crossed the line? And I'm not saying it's something that
I'm waiting
can
for
be done without.
New book. This is not fame. The actual book is out.
I have it.
But I don't read.
Yeah,
I
mean, you listen.
I hate reading.
Okay, dude, I have... All right, so I have the book. Haven't even been opened. I read the foreword from Dr. Trupinski. I read that. And that's all I read of it. And I listened to the audiobook. The audiobook for Digging Up Mother was amazing. They did a chapter, and then he recapped. He's like, well, I've been drunk. This wasn't right, apparently. I have Chad Shank here, and we're going to talk about what really happened. Because I wrote
you
that chapter.
Got, and like, double like, the content.
Yeah.
Plus all the joy of, like, his cadence and his drunk friends and shit like that. So I'm waiting for the audiobook of This Is Not Fame, which is not out yet.
He's working on it. It's almost done, from what I understand.
I was disappointed to find out that, like, he started writing this book, and then, like, Bingo went into a coma, and fucking, like, his mother died, and, like, he had a whole bunch of shit going on where, like, his neighbors committed suicide, and the other one died of cancer. Like, he had all the shit in the world going on. So rather than writing, like, this is my book, it's basically a collection of old essays and some new essays. I'm sure it'll still be great, but I was really looking forward to, like, this is not fame. This is my autobiography, the tale of Doug Stanhope.
Well, this is more centralized around stories with him and comics, whereas the Digging Up Mother was centralized around his mom, but it really talked about him growing up and then getting in the door of comedy, and then after he was kind of in that, that's where it kind of ended. But this one, I think, is more of like tales of like him and, you know, a bunch of different comics and things like that. Like I said, I haven't read it yet, but I can't sit. I'm impatient. I can't just sit and look at fucking letters on a page. I can't do that.
I'm looking forward to it, but I'm not going to co-sign it. I read all the biographies, but I'm not going to co-sign it until I hear it. Because if it is just like, okay, these essays are fucking outdated, then I'm going to be a little bit mad that he's like on the tour for it. Let me hear it first.
I heard he put a lot of work into it. I mean, that guy, from what I understand, he went to like motels for like a week and just escaped from everybody. And just sat in his hotel and wrote. And like when he wanted to escape and do that, and then he went back and he's like, "All right, I'm going to the hotel for a weekend or whatever, and I'm just gonna work on this book. No distractions, no people, no nothing." And
so he keeps sort of teasing this story on different podcasts that he knows someone that Louis jerked off on.
Yes.
And also that he pulled his penis out on Louis, and he has
a picture of it in the book.
And she just laughed at it. I think it's the girl from the Dork Forest,
mm-hmm.
or it's Sarah Silverman. But I think it was the girl from the Dork Forest, and she didn't seem to give a fuck.
Mm-hmm.
She was just like, yeah.
Well, Sarah Silverman's in the fucking picture. Or are you talking about another thing for Louis?
I'm talking about Louis. But she did come out against him kind of halfway when this whole thing broke.
Halfway.
Like his came out.
She's like, I love him.
But she certainly wasn't like, yeah, he jerked off on me. I thought it was hilarious.
Yeah.
I don't know what these bitches are crying about.
No, yeah.
By the way,
I mean,
you listen, shit for my career.
You listened to the Rogan podcast when Doug was on
Here
there?
Yeah.
Well, and Doug was on there, and he's like, I don't want to out the person or whatever. And literally, I went and saw Doug the day after Louis made the statement, and he had like 40 minutes. And keep in mind, it was like he would go into it, and then he'd do some other shit that was segued really, really well. And then he touched back. It was kind of like Louis was like home base. And then he kept going back to it, and then at the very end, I won't ruin it because in case it comes out in a special, but the line that what he did at the end, I was crying. Jen was crying,
hopefully,
my friends were, everybody was crying,
it
was so funny.
If it doesn't, we're going to have you come back and tell us about mm-hmm. the cut material.
Yeah, it was hilarious.
I don't know how much his shit changes from, like, his process of working on it. I don't know how much his freestyle. Because it seems like it's all natural when he's up there, but I know he writes like a motherfucker.
He can just go off on a rant like nobody's business. I mean,
some shit, like, it's, everybody has to go watch comedy live. Nobody does that anymore.
Yeah.
But like Bill Burr, before his last special came out, my buddy saw him, and he's like, he's got this bit about sinking cruise ships. Man, I was fucking in tears. My buddy liked it so much, he sent him an email and was like begging him to put it on his next special. But then it was shitty on the special. Like, he had a shitty audience. I don't know why he used that particular recording, other than he's trying to seem edgy. But it sucks, because something that I've been told is hysterically funny, I caught it in the wrong context, so it wasn't as enjoyable.
I'll be right back. I gotta grab a drink. I'm sorry.
We're gonna do more comedy news.
Yeah.
We'll go through some of the hits. Amy Schumer's in the news. Cosby's in the news.
So what's up with Amy Schumer these days? I don't keep up on all this.
We'll save that till Brad comes back.
Okay.
Actually, I might pause it so I can go pee.
That's not even funny, but...
What the fuck? This is a great street joke. All right, I'm going to hip you guys to some game. And I'm releasing this information because I'm probably not going to take advantage of it.
Okay.
Here's how you get into YouTube. And this is the next thing. It's the next podcast.
I'm
nobody
very
listens to podcasts, yeah. But YouTube... the biggest audience, and you can really make money really easy these days.
Mm-hmm.
Because, like, if you're watching a show live, you can give a donation from your phone. You don't have to sign up for Patreon or any shit. It just goes through your iTunes. $2 sent. And they have this thing called, like, a super chat, where it's like, if you want your name and a phrase to appear on the screen, you have to donate so much.
Benjamin does that.
So a whole bunch of people will be like, here's $4 to say, blah, 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 you suck, or blah, 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 you're the best. And the money adds up. You stack it up real quick. Two problems getting into it. One, you need a certain amount of view hours to be able to go live, and also you want an audience. So here's the easy peasy way to do that. You look at what audience you want. Do you want Joe Rogan's audience? Do you want Opie and Anthony's audience? Do you want all of their audiences? Start making short videos with news about them. Just a 5-minute video. hey, this person cussed out this person
tagging
today.
Their name.
Hey, this is what they said in a tweet. Right. And their fans will come watch your video just to catch up on whatever news they might have missed or hear whatever rumors are going around, and you'll build up subs and you'll get your view hours to be able to go live. Question?
Is that why I see videos all over my feed of just people posting Joe Rogan clips?
Yes.
Of his podcast?
One of my friends in YouTubing is this guy Saiyan Z. He just does Opie and Anthony shit. Mm-hmm. And then a couple days a week, he'll go live, and for 2 hours, he'll sit there and drink and talk to the chat. And they just bullshit about Opie and Anthony. They're people that want to sit down and have fans, a community. Yeah. But he doesn't have the burden of having to produce original content. It's, I'm recycling other people's content, and then I just bullshit with the fans of that shit. So I was thinking my niche might be I would just do comedy news, because that's what my Facebook wall is. I don't write personal shit. I just, like, here's this news article, here's this person you got to show.
That.
Like, because I think everybody should be as up-to-date as possible. I think that's who most of my followers are, is other comedians who want to hear all the fucking shit that's going on. Thought about doing that as a YouTube channel. Comedy news, which brings me to my new segment. Comedy news.
Yeah.
Did you hear about Amy Schumer today?
I did not.
There's an article going around that she interrupted a new comedian so she could run her dialogue for SNL coming up this week.
She interrupted a new comedian where?
So he was at, I believe it was Caroline's, and he was headlining. And this was like his first time ever headlining, and most of the audience was his like friends and family.
No,
it was
shit.
A big deal for him. And she shows up, and she's like, hey, can I go up and do 10 minutes? And they're like, this dude is like, you know, this is a big thing for him.
Show's
he just
almost
got
over. It's his spot. He's
he
already
just,
up.
He just walked on stage. Yeah.
Yeah.
So they're like, no, we don't think it's a good. And she goes, hey, I'm Amy Schumer. And they're like, we get that, but you know, we don't know how long you're going to be up there. And it's great that her name isn't big enough, because people treat her like she's Chappelle, and she's not. As someone that studies comedy, she's cut and paste. Fucking ugh. Not a big fan of Amy Schumer. So she says fuck you to the manager, walks up to the side of the stage and goes, hey, I'm here, can I do 10 minutes? And the comic, caught off guard, was like,
that's Amy Schumer.
Fucking idiot. Yeah, come on up here. Which, big break for him. And she did it in a very nice way of like, you're my buddy, would you like to introduce me? And then like, thank you so much for, like, it was a nice little boost from a celebrity. A nice thing to happen in front of your friends and family. She did like 10 minutes, and then he went up and he crushed, and he did the rest of his material. But she ignored the booker, she ignored the fucking manager, and she...
She banned from Caroline's now?
If it was anybody else.
She doesn't live out there, right?
I don't even know where the fuck it's at. But that was the comedy news story. I don't think it's a big story. She's certainly a dick for doing it. She's a year older than me. That makes me so mad, so angry.
How old are you?
35.
37.
It's like the luck of being in New York or LA.
You know, I was thinking about that the other day with TJ Miller, which is another story that's going to come up. Because I was wondering
a lot about him coming up.
I was wondering, how old is this guy? Because I started seeing him out of nowhere, and I went on his like IMDb or whatever that is, and I saw he's been on a lot of
everything.
Things. Mostly character voices, because he's got that voice. And I look, and I'm just like, wow, this guy's done a lot of fucking work. And he's done that one New Year's Eve one that was pretty, or it was a Christmas one. I love that movie. And a bunch of other things. And then I look at his age, and I think he's like 32, 33. And I'm like, fuck. Like, I'm not there yet, but like, can I get to that point?
But
I don't know. Like, it's pretty
young.
It's pretty.
And he did anything. So he's the guy that, he was leaving Chicago as I was coming in.
Mm-hmm.
But he was like the big man on campus. And everybody fucking loved him. And he was a lunatic. And then he went out to LA, and his being a lunatic worked. Which is surprising, because I would have thought he would have scared the fuck out of LA people.
Yeah.
Well,
but he was in the news for raping a girl and breaking a beer bottle off in her asshole. And that story just kind of got pushed aside.
He denied it, and his wife or his girlfriend denied it. But she said, "I know her. She's a mutual friend," which is also kind of weird, right? Is that the same story?
There was like a couple different stories that came out all at the same time, mm-hmm. and somehow he survived. Like, I know he's off of Judd Apatow's show, and
yeah.
Judd's got to be in a weird place, because when Cosby came out, or when he was accused. He was Mr. Fuck Cosby. We do not give him a pass for being a comedian. He goes to jail. I draw
mm-hmm.
the line.
Mm-hmm.
And then hashtag Me Too happened, and it's like, half the fucking entertainment community is gone. Yeah. I wonder what position that puts him in as a fucking...
What, is he good friends with him, or...
I thought he was friends with Louis. He had TJ Miller on Silicon Valley. Mm-hmm. Like, he works with a lot of the same people over and over again. Mm-hmm. So, I was interested to see what happened with him. Did anybody watch the Gary Shandling documentary?
No.
On HBO? You can download... Here's more comedy news. Comedy Hustle. You can download the HBO Go app and you get a month free. And then just cancel it right away. You have a month. You can go watch the Gary Shandling documentary or Westworld.
Game of Thrones.
Game of Thrones. There you go.
It's only $8. It's worth it.
Normally I buy Westworld on iTunes or whatever show I'm watching, but they still haven't fucking posted it yet. So I don't know. I might see episode 4 and then I'm just going to have to wait till the full season is out.
I used to have HBO Go because I worked for a cable company and I had HBO for free. And it was great because... They would play the episode immediately when it was airing real time, and you could stream it. They would put it up there, and I mean, it was great if you forget to record it or something, and we'd be like out, like, "Oh, we're gonna grab some food and come back," because me and my girlfriend, Game of Thrones, you know, like, and it was great. I love that app. You can even fast forward, like, if you wanted to, you can go fucking fast forward to the end and like spoiler alert before it even comes on.
There's not enough shit that I care about. like Netflix drops new shit constantly. Every week there's new shit on there. And not all of it's great, but it lives up to my like $11. HBO has like 3 shows that I like. And they're on,
there's a couple that come out every once in a while, once in a while, man.
But so do you pay $12 a month or $15 a month to just have this endless catalog of shit you don't care about and then occasionally your show's on? Or you could just buy the whole full show for like $20, $30.
I guess you're right. It adds up. Like, True Detective was good.
I'm still pinching pennies, yeah.
True Detective was good. There was another one where this guy got accused of a murder, but he didn't murder the girl. Well, spoiler alert. You don't know. Well, actually, you don't know. But that was a good show. I can't remember the name of it, but it was like... The episodes were staggered and really weird. Like, the first episode was like 2.5 hours long, and then the next episode was like 45 minutes, and the next episode was like 1.5 hours. And it was just a mystery show of, like, this guy... He takes his dad's cab out, okay? And he's like this really, like, stuck-up kid that's, like, they expect the best out of him. He's like, fuck it, I'm going out. And his dad drives a taxi cab. He takes his dad's cab out. And then he gets drunk or whatever, and he picks up this girl. And this girl's like, I just want to get wasted tonight. And she gives him a pill. And, like, they get... And he wakes up in her house. He wakes up in the woman's house. He's like, wow, that was a great night. And he goes to lean over, and he goes, hey, I'm going to go, you know? And she doesn't respond. He turns the light on. There's fucking blood everywhere, and she's dead. And he runs out, locks his keys in the house, and he goes, like, he breaks in the house. The neighbor, hey, there's somebody breaking in that house, and the cops come. And, like, he's like, he doesn't know, you don't know what happens. It's a fucking great show. I don't know the name of it. I'd recommend it. It's also HBO. I didn't mean to get off on that tangent, but there's some good shit on there. There's some good shit. Westworld, I haven't seen it. I haven't caught up with it, honestly. I've been watching it and falling asleep.
It's disappointing to me. I like intellectual content. I want something I can chew on. And I see all these smart YouTube channels like Wisecracker where they give you all this breadth of philosophical shit that they read into it. But when I watch the show, I just don't pick up on any of it. I want there to be a lot more to it on the surface level that's easier to digest.
Well, I mean, I didn't even know who Joe Rogan was.
I got the name of it.
Until I saw him on... I saw him with Neil deGrasse Tyson.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And, like, I don't know, I'm really a nerd, you know. I love all the science stuff, but, yeah, I saw him, and they just had a good time, and then I'm, like, started watching more and more of his podcast, but I'm lazy, and I haven't gotten too far into this world yet, so I don't have much to say.
The show is called The Night Of.
The Night Of.
If you have HBO,
check out.
Go watch that. Just plan on watching the first episode. You'll be hooked 30 minutes in. It's like I think it's like 2 hours long, the first episode. I think there's like 8 episodes. It is amazing. I watched it twice, because I watched it, and then I watched it with a mutual friend of mine, and I got the chills watching it again. It's so good. So good. That's it.
Loudest goddamn opera music in the background.
Yeah, this is Josephine's, man.
Classy. Another shout out. Freedom Tunes. I just found this today on YouTube. They're really fucking funny. I clip up a lot of audio stuff at the end of my thing. It's like a collage, an audio collage.
Yeah.
Of just like ideas that I'm thinking about and a conversation I want to have or information I want to put out into the universe. there's some Freedom Tunes in it. So I always, or I try to always put the links so people can go find the shit for themselves on, in the description. We got some Alan Watts tonight with some Jordan Peterson. So,
yeah.
Instructions for my show before you get to that.
Do you like Jordan Peterson?
I love Jordan.
Oh my God. Did you get his book?
Yes.
Are you listening to it?
I already listened to it.
Oh, dude, I'm on chapter 5. Don't ruin anything. It's about raising kids, which is really, really lining up with me right now. I'm like, oh, yeah, that is right. That does make sense. I recommend the 12 Rules for Life. It's pretty good.
How old are your girlfriend's kids again?
The younger one's about to be 4 in a couple weeks. Well, she's going to be like a couple months, and then the other one's about to be 8 soon.
Yeah, entering into the good years. See, once they can fix themselves for quesadilla.
Oh no.
Life gets so easy.
Instructions for the tail end of my podcast: go to a quiet place, relax by yourself, smoke a joint before you listen to it. Or have a drink if that's what you do. I prefer you smoke a joint. That's how I get into the mindset of, like, I'm going to digest and grapple with new ideas.
Yeah. Also, you did what I liked when you did that with it. You had that special that you put up. It was like an hour special that you did, and I think
it's unlikable on YouTube.
Yeah, a shout out to that, a plug in that. But I like how you did that because you had material circulated around actual like live commentary of news and people talking about certain problems in society, and then you talk about it, and then like it was kind of cool. I liked it. I recommend. I like how you do that, man. I'm
check
not
out my
to
album,
fucking
Dying
of
Fire
right now, but.
Well, so, like, giving out the YouTube game. It's going to be a while before I have my computer up where I can do this shit. And I kind of wanted to keep that information to myself because I know some open micers are going to hear this and they're going to be up and running tomorrow. There's going to be, like...
No.
They're going to take over before I even have a chance to get my toe in. But I'm not going to do that. I'm going to... The live content is going to be me and my manager just talking mad shit and bringing in special guests. And we're just going to build our own audience off of unique content the hard way. But that major key is out there if anybody would like to take advantage.
No, I've been wanting to start going back into podcasting and doing video specifically because I think there's a broader audience on YouTube. But I got to do it right. I got to start it right. I got to be consistent. And I got to, you know, I just got to... A lot going on right now, but I'm gonna set. I got my office set up pretty good. When I have video set up, and it's gonna be bitching about a lot of shit that people aren't happy with. But
it's very weird because there's a what is that thing? Accordion playing. There's French music on behind the fence.
People tap dancing
and Italian
upstairs.
Shit.
Yeah,
and tap dancers. We're here in Villa Park.
Irony and it's fine.
Fat ass bitches. So if that's what you're into. Big booty girls everywhere I go. I say about Illinois, like in the city, the women aren't that bad, but like every 10 miles you get out from the city, add another 10 pounds.
Or they walk around.
Right.
Yeah, when you're in the city, everybody's
we're
walking
a hardy
all the time.
People.
Yeah, and then you get out to the suburbs and you get out. I was just thinking about that the other day. Like, everyone's more fit, like when you get towards the city.
City's beautiful during the summer.
Yeah. The first warm day.
Hey, if it gets worse the further away you get from the city, there's certain places in this country I never want to go. Because if you had 10 pounds.
So, picking up from last week, I guess maybe the last topic, because this fucking loud ass Italian music is bugging the shit out of me. I'm sure it's going to be super loud on the podcast. I was talking about Kanye, and specifically like Ebro and Charlamagne the God were attacking him and saying he betrayed the black community. And I tweeted at them and Don Lemon and said they're a bunch of Uncle Toms for turning their back on Kanye. And I'm banned from Twitter now for hate speech.
Completely?
I have to either delete the tweet or I have to delete the tweet to come back.
Is the tweet still up?
They removed it anyway.
So how do you delete what's already gone?
If I want to participate again, I have to acknowledge that I have to bend knee that it was hate speech.
Bend the knee to the fucking white bird.
You have to suck ass.
But I don't know where the fuck they get off saying Uncle Tom in a particular context.
That's exactly what you said, though.
Yeah. I said, Don Lemon, Charlamagne, Ebro, you're a bunch of Uncle Toms for turning your back on Kanye. Hashtag probably Tiger Energy Energy. And then a link to my last podcast. I don't know if somebody actually reported me, or a much scarier thing.
Autobot.
AI.
yeah.
that just scans for keywords, and
it's proven.
It's proven.
It's proven that it happens. If you listen to Crowder, and I know a lot of people like this, but they went and actually
Louder with Crowder.
Louder with Crowder. They went into the YouTube thing, and they pretty much said they're working on a system. It's not perfect yet, but it will be soon, and it's just auto algorithms. There's times where people actually liked a video. I believe it was with Sam Harris and somebody else, but they just liked a video, and they don't even produce content. They liked it, and they got flagged for liking a video instantaneously. And then they got their YouTube. They couldn't use their YouTube for like a week. You get what for liking a fucking video? Are you kidding me? Like
now, so YouTube, Twitter, Facebook, these companies are deciding what is hate speech, which I'm all for. Like, they're a private company. They're not the government, so they don't necessarily have to respect free speech the same way the government has to.
Correct.
But I kind of feel like if it's a social network, then it is a public platform, just like a public park.
That's a no-brainer.
But it's not. If they're censoring it, now they control the content.
Well, now we're controlling the dialogue. Like Mike David from Red Bar made an amazing point. He kind of found what I was grappling with, which was he was like, Ebro and Charlemagne, they're the establishment. They're intentionally mishandling his information. Anybody that watched the full clip figured out what he said right away. Like, he kind of stumbled over it and he said it poorly. But it doesn't take a genius to understand what he was actually saying. And they intentionally are obtuse and misconstrue what he's saying mm-hmm. because they're the establishment, because they're controlling a narrative. And that's really fucking... it's horrifying to learn because they're the guys that, like, the young people look up to. They're supposed to be still honest, still, like, young and hip enough to be honest.
Yeah.
And they're not. And then you got Twitter with the fucking AI bots just scanning for keywords.
What happens on YouTube? It happens on Facebook. I mean, that's kind of the reason why Facebook was in this whole problem, because once this whole thing happened where people were getting their accounts, like, data mining and things like that, and he actually got in front of Congress and actually started talking about these things, it wasn't just a bunch of fucking Republicans going, like, you hate Republicans. Some of it might have been. Maybe Ted Cruz. But but he did bring a good point. But my point is, like, it's... If you are controlling what shouldn't be on there, and obviously there's some things that should not fucking be on there, like obscene crap, you know.
Kind of like in a public place, if yeah. you come up and show your dick to little kids, you
exactly.
shouldn't be there.
Exactly. But if you are censoring Uncle Tom, okay, now you are deciding...
In what I would consider a proper context.
You are deciding what content is on your platform. You are no longer an open source... You know, you are controlling content. Now you're a content provider. Is how they see it. So if you're gonna censor one thing, you gotta censor everything. And who decides that?
That's why they're under fire.
You just hit an amazing point. Now the average person is a content provider beholden to who? And who is the sponsors that don't wanna be associated with hate speech.
Yeah.
They don't wanna be like
demonetization.
Right.
Yeah.
You don't get to get paid because we don't feel like our fans can handle your level of content. It doesn't work with our narrative.
Mm-hmm.
So you're shut down.
And a lot of the censorship, for anyone that's listening, this is... And you can say whatever the fuck you want, but it's mostly right views that are being censored. It is, if you look into it. But this is damaging as anybody who wants free speech, comedians especially, when something happens like this and people go like, well, yeah, fuck him. It's just like, dude... Do you want to go to Canada where you get arrested for saying shit on stage? Like,
Nick DiPaolo got fired from SiriusXM.
I mean, this
for
is...
a tweet where he said, "I wish a terrorist would attack a woman."
I think
that was the tweet. Yeah. Fired, lost his job.
Yeah. I mean, we really got to decide where the fuck we're gonna go with this. Are we gonna? I mean, it's gotta be blunt. It's gotta
who
be clear.
These
like, what
are
do you allow? What don't you allow?
Free speech.
What was that?
Who are these people that are more important than free speech? Did they get to decide what is moral and what is not moral?
It's all the people that kind of cringe when they go, I don't know about that. I don't want that on there. But once you cut open that fucking thing, it pours out, and now you have a huge problem to deal with.
Well,
now you got to control everything.
The First Amendment. Well, I mean, let's face it. The First Amendment was written when. When there were, what kind of TVs did they have? None. You know, what kind of media did they have whatsoever? They had newspapers and people speaking in public, you know, but
similar to what you said about, like, when they wrote gun laws, they didn't have AR-15s.
Well, yeah.
That's a common point that comes up a lot.
We're not even starting
that. Yeah, we're not going into guns. But,
yes, because I'll talk for hours.
But, okay. The government hasn't caught up to the technology. Or the technology is just leaps and bounds. It grows every fucking goddamn day.
Exactly.
The First Amendment is now catching up to where guns are, where it's like, oh, we're not prepared for what free speech really means.
Yeah.
In a fucking nation of savages that have been, you know, falling for our okey-doke, how do we rein them in and keep them controlled?
Well, also keep in mind, this is private people or corporations that are deciding what right you do and don't have amongst their establishment, whether that be cyber, what you're saying, or in a Buffalo fucking Wild Wings, where it says straight up, on some buildings, the Second Amendment stops here. Like, they have the right to do that. That's their business. That's fine. The government does not have the right to do that.
You would hope that, but capitalism would provide the answer and say, like,
look at dicks. Look at dicks, dude.
All right, YouTube.
Have you heard about dicks?
Tell us about dicks in a minute.
We're getting to the Second Amendment.
YouTube is too censored. Like, you can't keep super raw content on there. Mm-hmm. So we need an alternative to YouTube. But, like, nobody wants to start one because they feel like they have to start with YouTube's audience, which YouTube had to build up to this. This took 20 years to get as big as they are.
Yeah.
But it's like, if you start Vimeo, well, fucking, you're going to have six people on there, and they're going to be the six worst people just posting Holocaust denial and, you know, racism and, like...
Mm-hmm.
But
where does it start?
We might need that to start, and over 15 years grow to the actual free speech network. And there has to be an alternative to... If Twitter is censoring, then we need an alternative to Twitter, and we gotta wean the people over to the free speech side. But people are scared of losing the audience.
I mean, you get doxxed.
People feel like content providers.
You lose your. I mean, who was that? That was that one Fox reporter that said.
What's more
to David
important,
Hogg,
freedom or views?
To David Hogg, that, like, well, maybe something about, like, maybe you just weren't good enough to get in those schools, and then David Hogg came out and he's like, I demand that all of these advertisers, and listed them off, dox her, and a lot of them did, and it's just like, is that the power we have for political correctness? Like, what's more important, political correctness or freedom
nothing
of
good
speech?
Comes out of groupthink. Even if you're right, you're likely to be more cruel than you need to be.
If you're a dick,
because you have the mob behind you.
Yeah, I think if you're a dick, let them be a dick and just don't support what they're doing. And there's going to be other dicks that want to put their dick on their dick and say, hey, let's touch dicks. I like what your dick is doing.
We're afraid of...
Let them be and just fucking don't ignore them.
Wait.
I'm sorry.
These people always will say this shit. Anytime somebody says something they don't like, they're like, well, I'm exercising my free speech to disagree with what you say.
Perfect.
Yes, I want you to disagree with what I say. I want you to tweet at me and say you're a piece of shit and you're wrong and this, that, and the other.
Right.
What I don't want is you to delete what I said so I can't say what I want. Disagree all you want.
Yeah.
Fucking be mad at me. Sometimes that's part of the strategy.
Well, yeah, and like you said, it's going to take a long time for it to catch up. I think it needs to be changed in the Constitution, but even in laws based on corporations.
What should it be changed to?
I don't know, and that's the thing. It's going to have to be
should
a lot more...
Should it be more freedom or less freedom?
I or think more it should be just better
detailed?
Defined. Better
if
defined.
Corporations get to identify as people, should they have to follow the people's rules, which is free speech, secondary, blah, blah, blah.
But
if it's their platform or their establishment...
Then they're not people, they're a corporation.
So you don't
hit
think
them in the
can,
taxes.
So you don't think they have a right to determine people's freedoms in their establishment?
That's what we got to grapple with.
So it's all right. It's all right for me to not carry, like, for them to tell me I can't carry a gun in Buffalo Wild Wings, and I don't support what I'm about to say. But it's not okay for someone to refuse it, make a cake for a gay marriage.
So like, here's the thing of, like, I would support somebody's right to say no gays allowed. No blacks allowed. If you want to open that, fine. You will probably fail financially.
Capitalism will bite you in the ass.
But you're free to have that capitalist experiment.
And the freedom to...
But then when it gets to a platform that is as large as Facebook or Twitter, do the same rules apply? Where we go, well, now everybody's on this and this is part of everybody's daily life. Because it's kind of like I got forced into the corporation. Where, like, I didn't want to go to your public space. I just happened to be stuck here.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how to...
Unfortunately, it has to be that way.
It has to be.
Because if you decline
it
to be that way...
And you need alternatives, goddammit.
If you decline it to be that way, now the government controls what you say. It does. Now the government controls what you can and can't have on your thing, and that's it has to be that way. There needs to be an awakening.
So I don't want legislation. I want alternatives.
Yes.
Somebody make the better platform.
Someone needs to make a better platform. I think. I don't know.
In the meantime, we just gotta deal with the fuck shit.
I am almost for, you know, maybe just putting forth an age limit, though, for, like, access to sites where people really speak freely.
How do you do that?
That's tough.
Some people suggested getting rid of anonymity.
Somebody's kid let their kid watch it, and then the kid's going to tell his friend at school. So does it work? No.
But it's the problem with kids. I don't think it's the problem with kids.
Well, here's another one of Mike David's points I like a lot. He was like, look at today's generation. Like, the young kids. The lowest end of the millennials.
Who's point of view?
Mike David from Red Bar Radio.
Okay.
Chicago show. he's a loaded weapon. Today's generation, it's like 9/11 when you're 5 years old, and then school shootings every day, and they're pretty desensitized to a lot of shit. So when they go on Twitter, and by the way, they grew up with Twitter and Facebook, they're gonna say, they're gonna use the N-word a lot just for shock value, and it doesn't mean to them what it means to us. To them, they're just like, trolling is like this funny, goofy thing. But we're projecting hate speech onto it. And this is just like a horribly desensitized generation fucking having a goof and being shitty in the way that their generation is shitty.
Yeah, you're right. I take back everything I just said. I got Brad to laugh real good at that one.
Well, that was good enough for me. Hopefully it's good enough for the rest of the audience. I don't know. Yeah. I think we have a serious problem where we have to define what is right to say, what is not right to say, and if it's not right to say something, then who the fuck is going to control it? And if it's going to be the government, we're going to have a fucking problem.
Yeah.
Because that's what I think it comes down to. You have your right to... Facebook has their right to take people off and block them and whatever you want, but you can no longer call yourself an open source social media platform anymore. You are now a content provider, because by eliminating certain content, you are saying that some content is okay and it represents your point of view, and...
One of the problems we're dealing with right now, in this generation, because I just had a new employee that quit one day into his job. When they asked him why he quit, he said, I got yelled at all day. And then he hung up the phone. So now I'm in trouble. Nobody yelled at him.
Did you call him back
and yell at him? I wish I had. I wish I had fucking rung him up by his scrawny fucking millennial neck.
Because he screwed you over or what?
Well, he's someone that he would rather be a victim and say, I got bullied and I don't feel comfortable, than take responsibility for his decision to say, I don't want to work that hard. I just don't want to work here. It's not what I signed up for.
Oh, God.
I'm not into it.
Hiring millennials,
but that would be taking responsibility for his own actions, and people would rather be a victim than take responsibility for their actions, and we got to break that fucking, this generational lock of like, I'm a woman victim, I'm a black victim, I'm a Hispanic victim.
Victimization, like, there are real victims in the world that deserve
it devalues to be... real victims when everybody's a victim.
Correct. There are real victims that deserve some spotlight, and deserve some discussion about some real things that happened. But it's like a kid. Like, when you decide that you can get away with something by crying... And your parents just gonna be like, oh fuck it, I'm sorry. That's fine. Do whatever you want. We're all creatures of habits. We all test our boundaries. You read the book, 12 Rules of Life.
I also worked at a women's shelter where I helped women learn how to raise their kids.
But
one of the biggest
you,
thing I would teach them is, your kids are looking for boundaries, and they're testing to see where they're at and what's gonna make you break. And giving them boundaries makes them feel more secure in their relationship to you, in their relationships to the world, because they go, oh, I can go this far.
Yeah. They're constantly searching for boundaries. They want to know where that boundary is. And if you don't give them boundaries, or you give a boundary and then you let them cross it and you go, all right, well, don't do it again. It's the same thing. It's like, oh, I can get away with being whatever I want to accomplish that's completely doesn't work in society by saying a victim. And it works. Wow, it works. And now we're gonna have a generation of people that, and I don't like this whole term of like categorizing the entire millennials, because like it's not, you know. But we're gonna have a generation.
I'm technically
of people
a
that are,
millennial. I was told I was a Gen Xer my entire life, and then I was told there was some shit between.
How old are you?
35. 82.
You're right on the cusp, dude.
Yeah.
You're right
37,
there.
37.
So, but like I remember being 8 years old, and my grandmother being like, "Your fucking generation has." No, she didn't say fucking. She's a wonderful, sweet British woman. Your generation doesn't have any ethics. You're just bored. You're bored of everything. You're cynical. You're cynical layabouts.
You fucking bloke.
Yeah, and I was like, well, I'm 8. What, do you want me to get a job? Like, let me figure out my life, and then I'll tell you what my view on it is. But I haven't had any life experience yet.
Dude,
and that's what I'm doing to millennials now. I'm like, oh, you're all a bunch of pussies.
Dude, I hired a couple, like, 20-year-old kids to do landscaping. And it's like, I tell them right away, this is hard work. You gotta, like, you know... You
Nobody wants to work hard anymore.
Oh, my God. Whenever you're not looking, they're just standing there.
Oh, get off your fucking phones.
It's like, yeah.
I worked since I was 15.
You know, when it's like...
I worked since I was 5.
Start time is 8 o'clock, so they show up at 8:15, you know? Or you call them on Wednesday morning, and, like, where the hell are you? And they come over all hungover and shit, and, like, you can smell the alcohol on their breath. It's like, I'm not letting you work, you piece of shit.
Well, I come in hungover, but I get shit done.
Well, that's fine.
No, but I don't know. I don't know how to, like, put a bow on this thing, but...
We have a problem.
We're going to wrap it up and get out.
We have a huge
problem. All right, guys. Coming up next, you're going to have some new material from me. I'm the only comic that does new material every week. So either all comics are really lazy or I'm something special.
I've been doing that for the past week because I haven't been writing. So that's my... Until I write consistently 5 days in a row, then I have to do a new set every time I go up. I'm disciplining myself.
But how many shows do you do a week? All right,
well, here's one. I'm going to drop this conversation on you and I'm going to walk away to pee. Is comedy dead? Because, like, in the 80s, there was a comedy boom where all these clubs opened up, and so a lot of comedians got famous overnight, or not even famous, but they could work and make a living. And then people stopped going to the clubs, the boom died off, and it was hard for a lot of comics to find work. Well, now there was a new boom of podcasting and YouTube and social media where comedy literacy went up, and there's a lot of movies and documentaries about comedians, and interest in comedians went up, and... It was a good time to be a comedian. You could blow up on social media, but now we're oversaturated to the point that, like, it seems like there's more quantity than quality. It seems like there's more horse shit on Netflix. It'll be like two or three amazing people. So, talk amongst yourselves. Is comedy dead?
Are you coming back?
I'm gonna pee, yeah.
Coming back?
No, we gotta steer podcast forever.
Yeah, this is great. Is comedy dead? So we're going to talk about Is Comedy Dead, which is the topic that Hey, guys, follow me on Twitter, at Brad Stupendous. just plug the one thing that I have. Hey, we're at Josephine's. We have this open mic here every Thursday. And, yeah, it's a great show. It's in Villa Park. Yeah, you should come out to it. This is great.
It's a great time.
Yeah.
Comedy's not dead. Not completely. We're beating it to death.
I don't think it is. I don't think it is. I think we live in a smaller world. I think we are connected to everybody... so much easier. I do think that kind of things move in like an exponential rate, like a snowball.
And
there's people that have probably, and me, myself included, that have thought about doing comedy for a long time, and then when the content of comedians doing podcasts and stand-ups that became like more easily accessible to me, it just reinforced that little fucker in the back of my head that said, you need to do this. And one day I just did it. And I'm assuming a lot of other people woke up like that. Like, I had no idea.
Are you talking like do it as in just like starting doing open mics or just like doing podcasts?
I didn't even know what the fucking open mic was. I didn't even know what anything was.
I didn't either.
I didn't even know. And shout out to the fucking Chicago. Like, you're not really like, you don't really go around that often. You come here.
I come here. That's
but if
it.
You were to come out to the Chicagoland comedy scene, this scene is amazing. I would not be doing comedy to any extent if I didn't have the group of people that I made as friends, and the way that everybody just helps each other and promotes each other, and you know, just down to the little pact of just talking to each other after the show. And I've built a lot of fucking friendships just this fucking scene. Had that not have been there, I don't think I would have been doing anything. And I have no idea that this scene existed at all.
Guys, until, joining the podcast.
Until I decided to do that.
I didn't know until
I didn't know it was this big.
Want to be on a podcast?
No, not really.
Okay.
I think we're wrapping
up. Want to be associated with it?
I didn't know about this scene until like 6 months ago, dude. It's, I mean, like, how long have I been coming?
Connor.
6 months, 8 months?
Yeah.
And I don't go anywhere else.
You should.
I'm banned from Spring Inn now.
You've got to count up how many mics you've done, don't you?
I know I'm somewhere around 20.
You count your time, which is crazy.
Count time?
Yeah, you told me you've done like 2 hours or something. Like, all together.
I said I have 1 hour that I could do straight.
I don't know. That's hard.
This guy, Tommy Odeed, out that's in Boston. Hard. Boston comic, shout out. He was like, it's kind of like AA, where it's like you got your first month chip, and then your 2 month chip, and then your 10 year chip, and...
But you only have
today. You respect everybody that's doing it, but like...
Wait, were you at the AA meeting by mistake? I don't know what's going on here. Chips are being passed out, I don't know.
But is comedy dead? Do we think comedy's dead?
Topic. Is comedy dead? No. Is it oversaturated with horse shit?
Huh. That's not dead.
I don't know if it's dead or if I was just more enlightened after I became a part of this community is my point. Yeah. Like, did I had no idea this community existed.
I didn't, to this extent. What are you talking about, local comedy or comedy in general?
Both.
Well, I mean, you can take the small community and you can compare it to the rest. I'm sure everybody else has their
communities. Microcosm and the
microcosm. Hey,
Kyle.
Yeah,
Kyle Allen. Thanks for saving a chair for me.
Yeah, sure.
You want to be on a podcast?
Oh. Is comedy dead? Do you think comedy's dead?
My comic career is dead.
Personally. You were at Cigars, I heard, huh?
Yeah, I was hosting. It was fun. Nine people showed up.
So all right, guys, cool. I'm going to wrap this up so that everybody can just relax and have a normal conversation. Follow me on Twitter, even though I'm banned. I'm not going to be updating, but just follow me. Just give me a lot of views at Chicago Open Mic. Where can they find you, Brad?
Twitter at Brad Stupendous.
Chris?
No. Twitter, nowhere to find me. I wasn't even here.
He'll be under a bridge, not doing heroin. Anybody else want to shout out their Twitter?
Sure about that?
Yeah, you can find Kyle Allen disrupting another podcast. I don't got a Twitter.
All right,
good Josephine's on Thursday.
Josephine's.
Hell yeah!
That's pretty much the only place.
Villa Park.
Brad already did the plug.
$2 beers. Come hang out.
Plug.
All right, y'all. Deuces.
Keep it going for Connor. Yeah, Farrell, everybody. Yeah. Oh, the next guy's already up and ready to go. Yeah. Make some noise for Ian Ellis, everybody.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Brad, don't worry about the music. The basement is going to take care of it. Mother-in-laws, these are the worst, yeah? You got these folks, these fucking mother-in-laws? These fucking boring whores? This is the worst part of a mother-in-law, is you have to talk to that dumb bitch. You never have anything interesting to say, the most boring, bland bitches on the planet. Jesus Christ! But you have to talk to them about the weather and arts and crafts and shit. Because you're fucking their daughter. Sometimes I'm just thinking in the back of my head, do you know what kind of dirty shit I do to your daughter? You know what it looks like when she's sucking my cock? I gotta talk to you about fucking fall colors? Ah! I hate you, bitch. Like, my friends are either funny or interesting, because I don't care about your life otherwise. I treat conversation like a boxing match. Otherwise, it's fucking boring. I don't care about your hopes and dreams. Your career? Kill yourself! Stop talking to me! Where I run into trouble is at work, where I'm forced to talk to people. Because people just fucking talk at me about their whole goddamn life. People talk at me about cars and interests I've never had. I not only have to be polite, I'm not allowed to be interesting. Do you know what kind of torture that is? One asshole was telling me that my car was breaking down. I tried politely 3 times to shoo him away. When he refused, I was like, dude, I'm not buying a fucking car. Beat it. 2 days later, my car broke down. Karma's a motherfucker. It's also why I hate helping people. When you help them, you're inviting people to come into your life with full of boring conversation. I'm sorry you struggle with alcohol. Would you stop calling me every hour of the day? Be a better person. I find conversations to be tiresome. I've been banned from Twitter. Clap it up. It's weird because I say reckless shit all the time, but I got in trouble for calling somebody Uncle Tom. I didn't even know that shit was hate speech. What the fuck?
How the fuck did I get busted for that? I'm happy though. I feel like I made it. I feel like my kid takes for granted how much he's loved. Like, my life was fucking awful. He doesn't have to go through any of that shit. So he doesn't appreciate the fact that I'm not beating the living shit out of that kid every goddamn night. Act like you enjoy hugging me! I love you so goddamn much! It's hard. Kids will make you love too much. Like, I never thought I would love anything that much, and he's over it. I appreciate that. I want to kiss you. Alright, guys. My name's Ian Ellis. I love you. Good night. Yep. Over Ian Ellis.
The ceramic model of the universe originated in cultures where the form of government was monarchical, and where, therefore, the maker of the universe was conceived also at the same time in the image of the king of the universe. King of kings, lord of lords, the only ruler of princes, who dost from thy throne behold all dwellers upon earth. And so, all those people who are oriented to the universe in that way feel related to basic reality as a subject to a king.
What's going on there? What's going on there exactly? You know, it was interesting listening to Trump's inauguration speech because I detected elements of National Socialist thought in it. When you radically activate on the side of the left, you call forth compensatory forces, and they're not in your control. And like Trump opened his speech, you just read it, he sounds like a 1950s socialist. You know, he's going to use the power of the state to bring the industry home, to produce a lot of infrastructure. It's a state business unity with the state in charge. And then at the end of his speech, which is where he stops being at least the international kind of socialist, he says, well, borders are really important, and so is national identity. And, you know, he does embed that within belief in God, which is probably a good thing, assuming that he's serious about that.
And so they are on very, very humble terms in relation to whatever it is that works all this thing. I find it odd in the United States that people who are citizens of a republic have a monarchical theory of the universe. Because we are carrying over from the very ancient Near Eastern cultures the notion that the Lord of the universe must be respected in a certain way. People kneel, people bow, people prostrate themselves. Because and you know what the reason for all that is, that nobody is more frightened of everybody else than the tyrant. He sits with his back to the wall and his guards on either side of him. And he has you face downwards on the ground because you can't use weapons that way.
But, you know, the fact that Trump was elected and that there was such a fight between him and the Clintonites, and that the Clintonites were playing identity politics instead of speaking for the working class, who then Trump co-opted like he should have.
And the man who rules you all is the biggest crook in the bunch. Because he's the one who succeeded in crime. The other people are pushed aside because the criminals, the people we lock up in jail, are simply the people who didn't make it.
There's a war going on there. We're in a chaotic time. And, you know, I've got letters from people all over the world who tell me how they can't say what they think. It's like, oh, well, that's not very good. And they're kind of happy with me because maybe they think that I emboldened them in some way. And so good for that. Hypothetically, and most of the people who wrote me, the overwhelming majority, were reasonable, so pretty happy about that too. And what's at the bottom of this is an ideological war, or philosophical war. It's even deeper than that. It might even be deeper than a philosophical war, which is something that's more like a metaphysical or a theological war. You know, it depends on how far down you look, and the postmodernists know exactly what they're doing. This isn't accidental. Of course you shut down speakers you don't agree with, because you can't have a dialogue with them then anyways, because human beings can't have dialogue. There's no such thing as a human individual. There's no such thing as truth. Here's the postmodern world. It's the Hobbesian nightmare. It's everyone against everyone else, except it's not individuals, it's groups. and you're stuck in your damn group, and it's the only thing about you anyways that's relevant, which is why we might base our hiring on it, for example. And you're oppressed, and even if you don't know it, it's only because you've internalized it, and it's the only thing that's real about you anyways. And I can't talk to you because I'm in my own little silo of privileged belief, and besides, we can't use logic because that doesn't exist, and so you're in a group and I'm in a group, and all we can do is have a war.
So both these kinds of churches, which have an autocratic view of the nature of the universe, decorate themselves, are architecturally constructed in accordance with political images of the universe.
They hijack, you know, fear, they hijack compassion, they make anyone who puts forward an alternative view into a terrorist of ideas, and someone who's heartless at the core, which is really incredibly intelligent. It's such a good strategy. It's so devious and brilliant, and it's so effective. Because who the hell wants to be labeled a bigot? You probably are a damn bigot, just like everyone else.
Society hates women! We live under patriarchy!
Huh. I don't know. I mean, I've always felt most responsible adults kind of see it as a grass is greener thing. Men have it hard in some areas, women have it hard in other areas.
No, that's not true, because there's no such thing as sexism against men.
How do you figure?
Because society hates women.
Why do you think that?
Because it's never sexist against men.
Uh-huh.
Look at all these reasons that prove society is unfair to women. This proves we live under patriarchy.
Look at all these ways in which society is unfair to men.
Those don't count. If society exists to privilege men and oppress women, those things can't be the result of sexism.
No. If society exists to privilege men and oppress women, those things wouldn't happen. All you're doing is rejecting evidence that men have it difficult in some areas so that you won't have to adjust your original theory that sexism only happens to women. That's called circular reasoning.
So, you see, we spend an awful lot of energy trying to make our lives fit images of what life is or should be, which they could never possibly fit.
It's just being given a nicer and easier way through life as a result of the way you were born.
Yeah, okay, two can play that game. Give me an example of sexism against women.
The wage gap?
The wage gap only happens because men are discouraged from taking care of their children and working less hours. The wage gap is actually just benevolent sexism towards men. Poor me.
No! Benevolent sexism against men can't exist because we live under a patriarchy. How loudly do I have to say this before it becomes true? You know what? I don't need this.
That's what's going on. So what do you do about it? Well, I don't know what you do about it, but I have a theory, and that's one I've been working on for like 40 years. So one of the problems with postmodernism, and I'm going to take 5 minutes, and then we're done. One of the problems with postmodernism is that, and this is a big problem, like this is a fatal problem, apart from the fact that it's incoherent and there's no value structure in it, and it's fundamentally divisive and destructive. There's a logical problem with it too that's even worse. And so you might be noticing that the LGBT set of acronyms keeps growing, eh? And it's kind of a form of its own parody in some sense. It's like, well, I'm oppressed. It's like, yeah, you are. And well, I'm oppressed too. Yeah, you're also oppressed. And maybe I'm even oppressing you, being part of this other marginalized group, but at least we share our oppression. Well, I'm also oppressed. Well, so am I. I'm oppressed too. It's like, okay, so here's a problem. There's a big problem here. The problem is, it's true. You're oppressed, you're oppressed, you're oppressed, you're oppressed. God only knows why. Maybe you're too short, or you're not as beautiful as you could be, or, you know, your parent, your grandparent was a serf, likely, because almost everybody's great-grandparent was. It's like, you know, and you're not as smart as you could be, and you have a sick relative, and you have your own physical problems, and it's like, frankly, you're a mess. And you're oppressed in every possible way, including your ancestry and your biology, and the entire sum of human history has conspired to produce victimized you with all your individual pathological problems.
I have to go anyway. I'm late for a seminar I'm attending.
What's the seminar about?
Why gendered language is problematic. So stop mansplaining at me so I can go be a patriarchy-fighting feminist.
Okay, but the problem is that it is true. And so if you take the oppressed, you have to fractionate them and fractionate them. It's like, You're a woman. Yeah, okay. Well, I'm a black woman. Well, I'm a black woman who has two children. Well, I'm a black woman who has two children and one of them isn't very healthy. And then, well, I'm a Hispanic woman and I have a genius son who doesn't have any money so that he can't go to university. And, you know, I had a hell of a time getting across the border. It was really hard on me to get my citizenship. My husband is an alcoholic brute. It's like, well, yeah, that sucks too. And so, well, so let's fix all your oppression. And we'll take every single thing into account, and then we'll fix yours too. We'll take every single thing into account. It's like, no, you won't, because you can't. You can't. It is technically impossible. First of all, you can't even list all the ways that you're oppressed. Second, how are you going to weight them? Third, who's going to decide? And that's the bloody thing. Who's going to decide? That's the thing.
Welcome to the Echo Chamber. I'm your host, Dr. Mack. Decades ago, civil rights leaders had a vision, a dream, that black people would be able to live their lives however they chose, without fear of being judged or ostracized for taking part in certain activities, holding certain views, and choosing certain lifestyles simply because of the color of their skin. And we, their white saviors on the left, gave that option to them. So the question is, a whopping 60 years later, why are so many black people still stepping out of line and endorsing political opinions that we don't agree with? What started as a small subsection of uppity commentators has now spread to the likes of Hollywood celebrities such as Kanye West, who recently endorsed Donald Trump. That's right, folks. Hell has frozen over. Hollywood is promoting a negative message.
It's like, yes, true. Well, what's the answer in the West? It's like, in free markets, oh yeah, Christ, we'll never be able to solve this problem. No one can solve it. What are we going to do about that? We're going to outsource it to the marketplace. You're going to take your sorry, pathetic being, and you're going to try to offer me something that maybe I want. And I'm going to take my sorry, pathetic being, and I'm going to say, well, all things considered, as well as I can understand them, maybe I could give you this much money, which is actually a promise, for that thing. And you've packed all of your damn oppression into the price. And I've packed all my oppression into the willingness to pay it. And that solution sucks. It's a bad solution, but compared to every other. And so there's a tremendous illogic at the bottom of this. It's like, you have to fractionate the oppressed all the way down to the level of the individual. Well, that's what the West figured out. You know, there's a couple of figures who have the mythological roots of our culture. And, you know, people will get upset with me because I bring in religious themes, but I understand some things about mythology and religion. It's not an accident that the axiomatic Western individual is someone who was unfairly nailed to a cross and tortured. It's like, yes! Right! Exactly! So what do you do about that? Well, I thought about that for a long time too. It's like, well, you don't get together in a damn mob, because all that does is allow you to be as horrible as you could possibly imagine and suffer from none of the consequences. That's a bad idea. So how about we don't do that? Well, there's a deep idea in the West too. It's like, pick up your damn suffering and bear it. And try to be a good person so you don't make it worse. Solution, man. It's why 10% of us have freedom.
From childhood up, we have had to conform to a certain social game. And if you're going to conform to this game, you can make mistakes or not make mistakes. So this thing has gone into us all the time. You must do the right thing. There's certain conduct appropriate here, there's certain conduct appropriate there. And that sticks in us and gives us a double self all our lives long because we never grow up. But when that is not seen, we play the games of getting on top of things all the time. And so we're in a constant state of competition as to, if it's not I'm stronger than you, it's I'm wiser than you, I'm more loving than you, I'm more tolerant than you, I'm more sophisticated than you. It doesn't matter what it is, but this constant competition is going on. In terms of that competition, we can, of course, lose place and in that sense make mistakes. But what a Zen student is a person who is not involved in the status game.
There's this idea that hell is a bottomless pit, and that's because no matter how bad it is, some stupid son of a bitch like you could figure out a way to make it a lot worse. So you think, well, what do you do about that? Well, you accept it. That's what life is like. It's suffering. That's what the religious people have always said. Life is suffering. Yes. Well, who wants to admit that? Well, just think about it. Well, so what do you do in the face of that suffering? Try to reduce it. Start with yourself. What good are you? Get yourself together, for Christ's sake, so that when your father dies, you're not whining away in a corner, and you can help plan the funeral, and you can stand up solidly so that people can rely on you. That's better. Don't be a damn victim. Of course you're a victim. Jesus, obviously. Put yourself together. And then maybe if you put yourself together, you know how to do that. You know what's wrong with you, if you'll admit it. You know there's a few things you could, like, polish up a little bit that you might even be able to manage in your insufficient present condition. And so you might shine yourself up a little bit, and then your eyes will be a little more open, then you can shine yourself up a little bit more, and then maybe you could bring your family together instead of having them be the hateful, spiteful, neurotic, infighting batch that you're, like, doomed to spend Christmas with. So then you fix yourself up a little bit, kind of humbly, because, you know, God, you're a fixer-upper if there ever was one. And then you got to figure out, well, can you figure out how to make peace with your idiot brother? And probably not, because he's just as dumb as you. So how the hell are you going to manage that? And so then maybe you get somewhere that way, and your family's sort of functioning, and you find out, well, that kind of relieved a little bit of suffering, although it reduced the opportunities for spiteful revenge, and that's kind of a pain in the neck. And so then you get your family together a little bit, and you're a little clued in then, at least a bit, because you've done something difficult that's actually difficult. You're a little wiser, and so then maybe you could put a tentative finger out beyond the family and try to change some little thing without wrecking it. It's like, our society is complex, and we teach our students that they could just fix it. It's like, go fix a military helicopter and see how far you get with that. It's like, what are you gonna do? You're like a chimp with a wrench. Whack! Oh, look, it's better. It's like, no, it's not better. Things are complicated, and to fix things is really hard. And you have to be like a golden tool to fix things, and you're not.
And to be a master, he must get to the point where he's not trying to be a master. The whole idea of your being better than anybody else simply doesn't make any sense at all. It is totally meaningless. Because you see everybody manifesting the marvel of the universe in the same way as the stars do, and the water, and the winds, and the animals. And you see them all as being in their right places and not being able really to make mistakes, although they may think they're making mistakes or not making mistakes, and playing all these competitive games. But that's their game. Now, I only say, if that game begins to bore you, and it begins to trouble you and give you ulcers and all kinds of things, then you raise the problem of getting out of it. And therefore, you start to become interested in things like Zen. That is simply a symptom of your growing in a certain direction.
And that's the other message of the West. It's like, how do you overcome the suffering of life? And I'm not saying it's only the message of the West. How do you overcome the suffering of life? Just be a better person. That's how you do it. Well, that's hard. It takes responsibility. And I think, you know, if you said to someone, you want to have a meaningful life, everything you do matters. That's the definition of a meaningful life. But everything you do matters. You're going to have to carry that with you. Or do you want to just forget about the whole meaning thing, and then you don't have any responsibility because who the hell cares? And you can wander through life doing whatever you want, gratifying impulsive desires for how useful that's going to be. And you're stuck in meaninglessness, but you don't have any responsibility. Which one do you want? Well, ask yourself, which one are you pursuing? And you'll find very rapidly that it isn't the majority of your soul that's pursuing the whole meaning thing, because, well, look what you have to do that. You have to take on the fact that life is suffering. You have to put yourself together in the face of that. Well, that's hard. Christ, it's amazing people can even do it. I'm stunned every day when I go outside and it isn't a riot with everything burning. Because really, God, you talk to people, it's like there's all these ruined people out there. They've got problems like you can't believe. Off they go to work and do things they don't even like. And look, the lights are on. My God, it's unbelievable. It's a miracle. It's a miracle. And we're so ungrateful. College students, postmodern types, they're so ungrateful. You know, they don't know that they're surrounded by just a bloody miracle. It's a miracle that all this stuff works. And all you crazy chimpanzees that don't know each other can sit in the same room for 2 hours sweltering away without tearing each other apart, because that's what chimps do.
Where you are tired of playing a certain kind of game, you are as naturally flowing in another direction as if a tree were putting out a new branch. So because you say, oh, well, we people are interested in higher things, you see, that depends still on the differentiation of rank between the superior and the inferior people. But when you begin to see through that and grow out of that, you don't think any more of this superior and inferior classification. And we are suffering from a kind of jitters that comes from being two-brained. Now, you see, I'm not saying that that jitters is bad. It's a potential step in evolution and an opportunity. Now, you know, in the same way that we have this in our culture, certain people who are comedians, who know how to make jokes and gags in a completely unprepared situation, face them with anything, and they somehow come through. So that is exactly the same thing in a special domain as Zen. Only the master of Zen does this in every life situation. But the important thing is to be able to do this. This is the secret. You must remember, you can't make a mistake. Now, that's a very difficult thing to do, because that's the real meaning of a monk. He is not keeping up with the Joneses.
So, anyways, so what happened? Well, I made some videos and I got to the bottom of some things, at least as far as I can tell, so I told you what the bottom is, and then I got this idea about what you might do about it, which isn't my idea. It's like, it's not my idea. It's an old, 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 old idea. It's far older than Christianity. It's old. It's the oldest story of mankind. Get yourself together. Transcend your suffering. See if you can be some kind of hero. Make the suffering in the world less. Well, that's the way forward, as far as I can tell, if there is any way forward. And that's what's under assault by the postmodernists. So look out, because they know exactly what they're doing. And they know exactly why they're doing it.
To sum it all up, This is why, like, the Bill O'Reillys of the world annoy me. Because the system that black people hate, and I say this all the time, the system we hate, it's not you. Like, we debate and stuff. Yeah. I don't hate you. I don't hate Fan because he's a white guy. I don't hate... It's the system that really gives a damn about... All people are suffering, man. There's white people that suffer, but the fact that this country uses race to confuse the masses into thinking it's some race war as opposed to, you know what, we in the same boat, that's the frustration.
Who's more guilty of perpetuating that right now in this day and age?
I think I feel the context in what you're saying, and I'm going to stand up and say this. The purveyors... I put O'Reilly in the same boat as I put Al Sharpton.
Yeah.
Where it's, guys, Al Sharpton is a worldly smart dude. He's a genius. I've had people try to get him in corners. And,
oh, yeah, I know. He'd snake his way out of anything.
And Bill O'Reilly, who says America doesn't like this. And it makes a poor white guy in Nebraska get angry.
Mm-hmm.
He feels like he's a white guy, but he ain't. And... And Al gets black people who just want somebody to talk for them, that's intelligent. He doesn't he makes them go, yeah, get riled up where you go, dude, you just want to go, this ain't what we should be fighting for. Mm-hmm. This right here. You know what I mean? So I think it's both sides on a higher level that makes the lower level fight the wrong fight. I think if the lower levels came, if you look at life as a pyramid, the bottom is full of the regular normal
people
lanes.
That just hang out, working, you know,
and I think
trying to get through.
If those people ever got educated in terms of this is ridiculous, then these higher level dudes that get ratings off of racism, they wouldn't exist.
That's what they do. It's like profiteering off of racism. That's how they make their living. So they keep it going.